Extra, extra, read all about the Lost World Expedition in the Daily Gazette. Giant beasts discovered, scientists in mortal danger. Extra, extra, read all about it in the Daily Gazette.
That's right, boy. Sell them like your life depends on it. Well, now we're in the thick of it. Thank God Ned's got the bit between his teeth. No sooner had we arrived on the isolated plateau than a gigantic beast lumbered straight toward us, and we scrambled to the cover of the woods. From there we watched, crouching in the protection of the brush, and witnessed an extraordinary sight.
A brontosaurus.
Living brontosaurus. This is the research of 10 lifetimes.
Look at it. 40 feet high and 100 feet long.
It's amazing. It's eating from the treetops.
Why not? It's a herbivore.
From what we know of these gentle dinosaurs, they subsist on plants and insects.
Do you realize that every moment we're here provides us with insight no other human being has ever had?
Let's keep moving inland. Our friendly brontosaurus may only eat plants, but there must be other dinosaurs that eat brontosauruses.
Oh, it's too late, Roxen. Everyone, lay low.
Oh,
God, it's a megalodon. Stalking.
Will they fight?
Surely as mongoose and cobra. Get off. Just one good shot. Don't waste the ammunition, Roxton. Its skin is as thick as a rhinoceros. Besides, we're here to observe.
Oh, remarkable. It's balancing on its two powerful haunches.
Look! Its forearms aren't as useless as we thought. It's actually holding the tree limb in front of it.
Camouflage.
Oh!
Charging the brontosaurus.
Swinging around, look out. That was too close. Let's move on.
No! Wait! Megalodon has the brontosaurus by the throat.
Jerking its tiny head around, trying to snap it off.
It's turning.
It's rolling out.
As we retreated into the darkness of the nearby forest, we continued to hear the gigantic struggle in the distance. After a few miles, we stumbled upon a large, festering bog of blue-gray mud. Enormous ferns encircled the swamp, creating a landscape of eons gone by. Putrid gas bubbled up through the thick, stagnant ooze. We found ourselves entranced by this primordial sight. After a time, Roxton drew our attention to the far side of the quagmire. An old lava formation jutted some 100 feet into the sky. Ominous cooing sounds could be heard emanating from its pitted facade. And what we saw amazed us.
Look, look over there. Be careful. One false sound and we risk rousing them.
Pterodactyl!
The entire rookery. Carrion everywhere. As long as the wind doesn't shift, they won't smell us.
No, but we could smell them. Oh, what have you two?
No quick movements.
There must be at least 100.
Oh, the smell. Blood and bones everywhere. And look, look.
Yes, the young squabbling over morsels of flesh.
This is incredible, absolutely incredible.
I'm going closer. No, no, be careful, you'll scare them.
Just beyond this stump. Watch out.
Oh, jeez. Oh, there.
Touchy, aren't they?
Remarkable. Rocking like birds.
Yes, with razor-sharp talons. Come on, let's keep moving. The wood thins out just beyond the rise. We should make camp as soon as possible.
Right you are, Roxton. I think we've had enough excitement for one day.
What do you make of these trees, Emily? Strange growth pattern, don't you think?
Very unusual. Almost another level of life on top of them. See how thick the upper branches are.
Yeah, what if I climb this one over here, this tall one? If I get to the upper branches, I ought to be able to reconnoiter.
Capital idea. It's time we knew where we were. Hey, give him a load of hand, Rox.
Right, right. All right, up you go.
Hurry, oh. Malone, tell us what's out there. The terrain ahead of us!
We have a whole world to explore.
Professor Challenger, may I remind you that the original purpose of coming here was to find the lost world, not explore it. We are ill-equipped for this type of campaign. I think we should get back to England as soon as possible and form a proper expedition.
She's got a point there, Challenger. Yes.
Professor! I can see almost the entire plateau from here. It's fantastic. It's primordial landscape, lush and varied.
Yes!
First, there's a central lake about a mile from here.
Probably rainfall. How else could a plateau get water?
What do you see straight ahead?
Oh, not much past the lake. There's mist rising up off the water. Wait, wait. Perhaps those are cliffs far off. Oh, damn. Here come the pterodactyls again.
Let's get you down from there. No need to take unnecessary risks.
Right. Lots to do before nightfall.
All right.
How could you think of going back, Summerlee?
It's not a matter of simply going back, Professor. I want to stay here as much as you do, but I have experience that tells me...
Oh, what could you have possibly experienced, young lady, in your brief career that would compel us to leave an expedition of this magnitude?
What is it?
Make way.
Not so fast. You'll slip.
No.
What was it? What did you see?
There was a face.
Where?
It was 2 feet from mine.
Calm yourself, lad. Tell us what happened.
I was coming down, hand over hand, when a face swung in front of me.
What did it look like?
Was it human?
I don't know. It was mostly human. Long, whitish, flat nose. The lower jaw was projecting and a few whiskers, I think.
Oh, it's an orangutan.
No, I tell you, it was more human than that. It opened its mouth and snarled. So did I, in a manner of speaking. I don't know which one of us was more frightened.
Did it have a tail?
Not that I saw.
Was the foot prehensile? Did it grab branches with its foot?
I think so. I mean, how else could it get away so fast?
Some sort of monkey, I should say.
Are you all right, Ned?
Yes.
I don't see it in the branches anywhere.
No, nor do I.
Whatever it is, it's gone now.
If it does come back, I'll take care of it. Meanwhile, we should set up camp.
Capital! I'm famished.
Dateline, the lost world. We made camp at the base of the tree. The night was cold, and so the fire was welcome. Supplies were beginning to run low. There's been a debate among us whether to shoot game. But since we've yet to see anything smaller than a dinosaur, that would seem somewhat problematic. Sometime after midnight, still unable to close my eyes, I decided to do some cautious exploration. The moon was quite bright, so getting about was not difficult.
I left the camp, undetected, and I walked about for a while, until I came upon a herd of medium-sized dinosaurs sleeping. The moonlight illuminated their massive, slumbering forms, and I was reminded of a herd of gentle cows. Being careful not to wake them, I continued along the perimeter of the clearing. In a few minutes, I came to a ridge, and I peered at the central lake that I had seen from the treetop. My attention was soon drawn to 2 armadillo-like creatures that had come to the water's edge. After watching them scurry about the shore, looking for food, my attention was drawn to a disturbance in the middle of the lake. Something was moving through the water with swift and deliberate speed. Moments before reaching the beach, it raised itself from the water. The action was so swift that the only thing I remember was the massive head and the terrifying teeth. In a single lunge, it devoured the 2 creatures. After that, I decided I had explored enough, and I turned away from the lake and I retraced my steps. When I was but a mile away from the camp, I thought I heard footsteps behind me. I turned to look, and sure enough, a great dark shape bounded onto my path, not 20 feet from where I stood. Its hot, rank breath assaulted my nostrils as I peered into the black, lifeless, unforgiving eyes. Suddenly, a wide, frog-like mouth opened, and it flicked a ghastly red tongue into the air, and I ran. I ran madly into the woods. My face and body were thrashed by branches. I dashed faster and faster. My chest ached. My lungs wanted to burst. Suddenly, the ground fell out from under me. And I passed out. When I awakened, the night was silent. Looking about, I found myself in some kind of hole. The first thing I perceived was the stench of rotting flesh. It seemed that I was lying on the carcass of a dead animal. But how? As I climbed out, I struggled to make sense of what had happened. From the edge, I looked around and saw that I had tumbled into a pit and only survived by landing upon an animal that had fallen in first and had been impaled upon sharpened spikes. It then dawned on me. This pit had been deliberately dug. Its spikes had been sharpened, and it was a trap. We were not the only humans in the Lost World. It was nearly sunrise now, and the rays of light pierced the canopy of the forest as I raced back with my new found realization. It was not until I was standing in the middle of our encampment that I discovered, to my horror, that my colleagues were gone. Hello? Hello? Elizabeth? Professor Challenger! Roxton! Where is everybody? Hello? Hello? Oh, God. What am I going to do? The camp has been ransacked. Hello? Hello?
Oh, shh. Not so loud. For God's sake, be still.
Good God. Look at you, Roxton. Where are the others?
Quick. Every moment counts.
Where are they?
Get the rifles, the cartridges, fill your pockets.
What?
Get a move on or we're done.
Look, you're not making sense. Roxton, tell me what happened.
The ape men. What you saw in the trees, my God, what brutes! Dozens of them!
Dozens?
Shh! Don't raise your voice. They have sharp hearing and sharp eyes. Where have you been?
I've been exploring. I fell into some kind of pit that was conceived by at least primitive intelligence.
Primitive savagery, too.
What happened?
I awoke at dawn. Challenger and Summerlee were just getting up, haven't even started arguing yet when it rained ape men. Dozens of them, thick as apples out of the trees. Didn't hear them gathering in the dark. I shot one through the belly, but before I knew it, they had us on the ground. They tied us up. They did fancy that, knowing how to tie knots.
Did they hurt Elizabeth?
Well, not exactly. Challenger told them right out loud he did kill us and be done with it, he told them. Good thing they don't speak English. Then one of them, the biggest and ugliest, the leader, I guess, he put his paw on Challenger's shoulder and he looked him straight in the eye. They might have been cousins. Summerlee was so nervous, she started to laugh. Then they set to dragging us through the forest. Look at my clothes.
Where are they now, damn it?
West of here, west of here. A village, if you can call it that. They tied us upside down, Summerlee and me.
How did you get away?
It's the obvious thing. They treated us like dirt, but they took the Challenger like he was some sort of long-lost relative. They gave him fruit and berries. When the ape men weren't looking, Challenger was good enough to slip something to us. Early this morning, I got free and ran like hell to get the weapons.
Were you followed?
Oh, it's hard to say. Malone, you've got to believe this. The Lost World is inhabited not only by ape men, but also by Indians. There's some sort of tribal war going on between them. While we were there, the ape men brought a dozen Indians to the village as prisoners, bitten and clawed so bad they could barely walk. This morning, they put two of them to death by pulling their arms off.
Oh, my God.
You know that patch of bamboo we saw at the base of the plateau?
With the sharpened points.
Well, it's right under the village. The apes throw their prisoners over the edge. That's why there are so many skeletons below. They even made us look. The bamboo had gone through the Indians like knitting needles through a pat of butter. They've saved a half dozen poor souls for later, plus the professor.
You mean Elizabeth?
But take heart, Malone. She's alive for now. And if we hurry, she'll still be so when we get there.
What can we do? Just the two of us.
Two of us? And guns. Look, they're masters of the trees. But in the open, we have a fighting chance. Now stick to the clearing and always, always have your rifle ready.
Right, right.
Don't let them take you prisoner. If you have so much as a single cartridge left. Now let's go. And pray to God we're not too late.
Mr. McConnell, sir, message just arrived from Mr. Malone.
Give it here, boy. Give it here. And back to your duties.
Oh, yes, sir, right away.
What? This is fantastic. Unheard of. All right, stop the presses. Stand by for a special edition. Malone's done it again. Dear Mr. McCardle, as I relate these events, I know that cannot possibly make sense. Yet they're completely true, and all the more horrifying for it. It was a sight I shall never forget to my dying day. Imagine a small village of primitive huts and the entire ape-man population gathered in a semicircle near the edge of the plateau. Within the circle were six Indians, as well as Somerley and Challenger. The ape-men jumping up and down, working themselves into a ceremonial frenzy. What filth! We could smell them from our hiding place in the bush some 50 yards away. Imagine, if you will, Professor Challenger positioned in the middle of the circle with the king of the apes. They were the same height, shared the same red color, and to our astonishment, seemed to be getting along, famously. And then, almost casually, the ape king raised his hand. Suddenly, two of the apes seized one of the Indians. This Caesar of the jungle now turned to his people and asked whether the captive should be saved or thrown over the edge. Like in the Colosseums of old, the Indian's fate was sealed with a mighty cheer from the crowd. The ape men then took hold of the Indian by his legs and arms and swung him three times back and forth with tremendous force, and then, with a frightful heave, they flung the poor wretch over the precipice. The deed done, the throng fell to the ground in paroxysms of laughter.
Bloody savages.
Is that what they did to the others?
Yes, onto the bamboo, skewered to death.
We've got to start shooting now.
How good a shot are you, boy?
Not good enough.
Then leave this business to me. After my first shot, fire at will. Ready?
Ready. You killed the king!
They start at the top. Now they're in disarray. Fire and keep firing, man.
Just as I thought.
They've never seen guns before. They're scattering.
Elizabeth! Challenger! Over here!
Hurry up! Run!
This way! We'll cover you!
Oh, you came back!
Damn it, this is over.
Hurry, hurry! We've got to get back to the camp before they regroup. Hello, hello. Who's this lookout?
No! No, don't shoot him, Roxon. He was one of the Indian captives. He may be of help to us.
Well, he certainly seems grateful. From his smile, I'd venture to say the day is ours.
He wants us all to follow him.
You speak his language?
Enough to understand it roughly. It's a variation on several Amazon dialects.
He's pointing to the side of the plateau.
Oh, let's follow him then.
On my word, Mr. Malone, I hope you're keeping an account of this in a diary. It could serve you well in your retirement.
He wants us to keep up with him and his party.
Notice how he and his men are staying in the clearing. Smart.
Yes, they are. But the ape men are powerful. I have an observation to make. This plateau is at a crossroads of evolution, just as the rest of the world was eons ago. We see before us a struggle between man and ape. Our world went in a direction which led to us. This world has not made that decision as yet. If this tribal war leads to a different outcome than fate handed us, my God, think of what that would mean to the future of our species.
Listen to this. From what little bit I've been able to gather, these people, they call themselves the Akala tribe. They come and go at will from the flatlands below.
What's
that he's saying?
Our friend has sent one of his scouts ahead to gather water. Do you understand what I said? There's a way out.
You mean there is a passage?
Jealously guarded it is, too. Clearly their enemy, the ape men, don't have use of it.
What's happened?
It came from the brook. Stay here.
Not on your life.
Oh, good God. Look at that Indian's neck.
It's turned all the way around.
What happened to... Oh, horrible.
It's the ape man's handiwork. They've been tracking us.
He said, you
don't have to speak the language to know how he feels.
We gave the dead Indian a perfunctory burial. Our new friend spoke a chant over his fallen kinsmen, and we continued on our way. It struck us as noteworthy that our leader refused to carry anything, leaving that task to his two remaining companions.
Elizabeth, keep close. How are you doing?
Tired, but I'll manage.
I was worried about you. When Roxton said that you'd been taken, I feared the worst.
And I was worried about you too, Ned. But I've learned from experience to deal with the worst.
What experience do you mean?
I was part of the Tasmanian expedition.
Oh, my God, you were?
Yes, there were 20,000 of them, you know. It was my first field research. I was with a team of 7 scientists looking for any vestige of the fabled Tasmanians.
I didn't know.
Oh, those simple, peaceful people wore no clothes, only grease and feathers. They'd never heard of fire and wanted nothing beyond what grew around them and little of that. One day, a band of them was chasing kangaroos, and the local British outpost thought they were attacking. The troops opened fire with guns and cannons against rocks and sticks. The army eventually exterminated nearly all of them. Our expedition was to try to find the last remaining few. However, by the time we arrived, they had learned to make weapons to fight and to trust no one. 4 of my party died at their hands. 3 of us were allowed to escape. Why? We shall never know. Perhaps it was to tell this story.
What a brave woman you are, Elizabeth.
Why, thank you, Ned. I was hoping you'd notice.
In a few hours, we found ourselves at the far side of the plateau. We had arrived at the Indian village. Whereas the ape men lived in crude mud huts, the Indians dwelled in caves. My first impression was how clean and orderly their settlement was, certainly in comparison to the stench of the ape men village.
What do you make of them, Samali? Rather advanced at this end of the plateau.
This is more than an encampment. It's a small town. There must be 200 people here.
Look, they're coming to greet us.
Oh, we must be the first white men they've ever seen.
Yes, this could be a pivotal moment in their civilization. Why, we could show them... Oh, no, no, look, they seem to be paying more attention to our friend.
They're bowing at his feet.
He must be their chief. See how he's calling them together. More like rallying the troops for battle, I'd say. Well, whatever he said worked. They're picking up their clubs and their pipes.
And running back towards Ape Town.
Yes, but little good will it do them. Clubs against clubs, rocks against rocks. And they need his guns.
Oh, this is their fight, not ours.
Come on, Challenger, what do you say?
Our guns will tilt the balance in the Indians' favor. From what I've seen of the ape men, I say absolutely. We fight.
What about you, Somerly?
You mean exterminate an entire people?
Oh, they're not people. They don't have any respect for human life. Let's kill them all if that's what it takes.
By what moral authority?
By the authority of survival.
Those ape men have every right to survive, too. What makes the Indians better than they are?
Evolution!
Are you quoting Darwin or Weissman?
I'm quoting Challenger!
We seem to have drifted very far from the objectives of our expedition.
It's us or them, Somerly.
I'm sure they feel the same way.
If we don't help Elizabeth, we shall never get off this plateau. There is no other way out.
Well, then God forgive us all.
Well, then it's settled. Let's go.
We hurriedly joined forces with the Indians and managed to cross the plateau before nightfall. By dawn the next morning, we were in position and allied with the Indians.
Ready? Aim. Fire!
wild clamor of shock and fear arose from the ape-man village. Those that fled from their huts were cut down. Others were set upon by gangs of Indians who exacted a long-overdue revenge with their clubs. The chief led his men well, and we formed an ever-tightening semicircle around the ape village. No one was spared.
Malone! There are a bunch of them trying to break through the line.
Got them! Set the huts on fire now! Smoke them out!
They've never seen fire before.
Move in! Move them toward the cliffs!
Oh, my God, that one's on fire. Put it out of its misery.
That's got it!
All right, form a line and close in. Form a line and close in.
And toward the rest of us, push them to the edge.
They're catching on. They know what we're doing.
It's about time.
Serves them right.
All right, close in! Close in, everybody!
Roxton! Right. Four of them are by the rocks, trying to escape. Don't let them get away.
It was both thrilling and horrible. One by one, the ape men were cut down as they scurried across the ground or clambered for the safety of the trees. Roxton's plan worked with deadly effectiveness. We drove the ape men toward the edge of the plateau, the edge that they had so cruelly tossed the Indians over in the past. Now it was their turn to die. Now it was their turn to join their enemies impaled on the bamboo spikes 600 feet below.
Over the ape men went, like trash emptied from a garbage can. Some pushed by their own kind, some shot by us, and the rest jumping in defiant sacrifice. This is phenomenal. Do you believe what you're hearing, lad?
Wow, in all my years in the newspaper business, that's the best story I ever heard.
And it gets better. All the feuds of countless generations, all the hatreds and cruelties, all the memories of persecution were purged that day. Not one ape man got away. Alas, it was a necessary slaughter. Great stuff, great. Hurry, get this down to typeset.
Right away, sir.
Faster than right away. I want it by yesterday. Don't you see what this means? Man has triumphed. The war is over for the lost world.
Extra, extra, extermination of ape men makes lost world safe for humanity. Extra, extra.
Well, it's done.
Some of the Indians, they're still looting the ape men huts. Look at them.
Yeah, spoils of war, you know.
Oh, my God. What have we done? What have we done?
What we had to do.
Perhaps the less we see of it, the better we shall sleep tonight.
On the contrary, we have been privileged.
Privileged?
Yes, to be present at one of the decisive battles in history. We here today dedicate this plateau to humans.
Professor, I think it's time we turned our energies towards escaping this plateau.
Yes. Malone, I've been thinking about something else.
Yes?
I understand that Roxton has been comparing me to that Ape King.
Not exactly.
I need not say that any publicity given to such an idea, any levity in your narrative, would be exceedingly offensive to me.
I shall keep well within the truth.
That is my concern.
Professor, the young chief whose life we saved has decided to favor us with a gift. Here it is.
A piece of tree bark.
Turn it over. Look at it closely.
It's a series of lines, like stick figures. Is this some kind of native artwork?
It shows 18 marks, all in a row. One of them has an X below it. If you look over there at the cliffs, you will see 18 cave openings.
You've lost me, Summerlin.
I think it's a diagram of the caves, and the one with the X must be the one that leads down.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Nothing I can think of.
Splendid. Malone, you get Roxton. He's doing me a favor over at the rookery.
We still have time to set out before we lose daylight.
Yes.
Roxton! Roxton! Where are you?
There you are.
I'm here to fetch you. The chief has shown his gratitude by pointing us the way out. Yeah. As soon as we gather up...
Well, what are you doing?
I'm visiting my friends.
This is the pterodactyl rookery.
Interesting beasts, don't you think? Damned unsociable, though. Hate strangers.
Whatever could you want in this deplorable bug?
Oh, this and that. I'm collecting a young chick for Challenger. One that hasn't grown claws or teeth yet. Call it a pet. Call it a souvenir, but don't call it anything until we get home.
Well, we're headed there as soon as you can join us.
Yes, well, I'll be along directly. And remember, not a word about this creature. The professor intends it as a surprise.
As you wish. 2 hours later, we were at the mouth of the cave opening. Barely 20 feet into the tunnel, we felt a hot updraft, which confirmed that we had found our escape. Burdened with our possessions, we painstakingly pushed and pulled them through the contorted passageway. Naturally, Challenger regarded everyone else's belongings as expendable and put the most effort into preserving
his own. Predictably, his were also the most cumbersome. After many a twist and turn in these ancient shafts, we found ourselves, thankfully, back at the base of the plateau. Many mementos, each providing yet another fragment of proof, had to be left behind. Besides, we were eager to take the canoes downriver to Manaus, board the ocean liner, and make the Atlantic crossing back to England, and whatever welcome we might expect at home. Malone! Malone, over here!
Hello, Mr. Mikado!
Welcome home, laddie, welcome home, and a triumphant welcome it is. All London is here to greet you, and your final installment will be on the streets any minute.
Wonderful, it's just wonderful.
Gather your group and come with me. We have a fleet of carriages waiting to take you to the Zoological Society. This night, history will be written, and you, my boy, will have the byline.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes. The world has been waiting the return of the Zoological Society's expedition to the Lost World. If you would all take your seats, we can begin Professor Challenger's account. Now, everyone take your seats. Take your seat. You sit down there now. Come, take your seats.
This way, Ned, this way. They're waiting for us in front.
Whoever expected crowds this size, Elizabeth?
Excuse me.
Let us pass, please. Excuse me.
Oh, Ned! There you are, and look at you.
Oh, hello, Gladys. What brings you here?
Why, you do, of course. I've been following your adventures in the newspaper, and so have all my friends. They hang on every word you write.
Why, thank you. May I introduce...
They're all so green with envy. And you know what I do? I tell them, oh, that's just Ned Malone. We're engaged, you know. It makes them even greener.
So, Gladys, what have you been doing with yourself while I've been away at the Amazon hunting dinosaurs? Any good dinner parties?
I've been cutting out your stories. They're in a scrapbook, which I just happened to leave in the parlor for callers to see.
Oh, does this mean that I've fulfilled your hopes, Gladys? That I've accomplished the impossible and I've made my place in the world?
Oh, yes, Ned, it does. You've exceeded even my wildest dreams. And now, at long last, I'm proud to say that I'm yours.
Oh, you have no idea how happy that makes me. But first...
I'm so glad, because you...
Gladys, please. Yes. May I present Professor Elizabeth Summerly Malone.
How do you do, Miss Hungerton? How do you do, Professor Summerly?
I think you missed the point, Gladys. This is Mrs. Malone.
I beg your pardon?
Elizabeth and I were married on the way back to England by the ship's captain, as a matter of fact. After our adventure together, we wanted to return home as husband and wife.
Ned told me so much about you after we were married, of course. He's a wonderful man. What a pity you didn't snatch him up long ago.
But, Ned, I thought... I mean, what...
I wish you wouldn't, Gladys. Things are much nicer as they are now.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Friendship is so... pleasant.
But... So nice to meet you, Miss Hungerton. Come, Ned. Illingworth is about to start.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes, Yes, we have all read the news. Yes, yes, we have all read the newspaper accounts of the lost world with excitement and skepticism. I believe tonight's debate shall be a colorful one, as are all exchanges between Professor Challenger and Illingworth on this and any other subject. I now present to you Professor Emil Illingworth.
Thank you, Dr. Meldrum.
Yes.
Thank you, thank you. While it may be true that all of England has become entranced by the accounts of the lost world, I feel obligated to remind our audience that Professor Challenger broke his word to us and put the credibility of this expedition in jeopardy. We are no further along than we were 2 months ago when he spouted his nonsense about living dinosaurs.
Yes.
With this in mind, I now hand over the podium to Professor Challenger and encourage him this time to provide us with facts rather than fiction.
Yeah.
I did not risk my life in the Amazon to face your hostility, Illingworth. When we first scaled the plateau, we encountered a brontosaurus. This was attacked within moments by a megalodon. I can tell you by first-hand experience that all of our theories about the vestigial nature of the megalodon's forearms may now be considered erroneous. The beast was able to grasp the neck of the brontosaurus.
Oh,
give us proof! Hear me up. Insects as big as your hand. Pterodactyls living as birds rather than lizards.
Professor Challenger, your tales are captivating, but in this instance, I must agree with Illingworth. You have submitted no evidence of your assertions other than a meager offering of fern leaves, soil samples, and a few bones of dubious origin.
Not to mention a piece of bark with a child scribbling on it.
Yes, we want proof. Scientific proof.
Yeah,
evidence. Oh, you do you? Well, then what would you accept as proof? An ape man, perhaps?
If you would provide it.
A dinosaur?
come, Challenger, now get a grip on yourself, man.
Something you could stake your professional reputations on, my
lord. Yes, indeed.
In that event, my soon-to-be discredited friends, I call upon Professor Malone, hitherto known to us as Professor Summerlee, her lucky husband Ed Malone, and Lord John Roxton. Would you please join me at the podium? Where are they?
Oh, here we are, Professor.
Gangway, ladies and gentlemen, gangway.
Here we are.
Thank you.
Gather round me.
Yes.
There. Are we prepared to educate the Philistines?
Well, we are, Professor.
As the audience can plainly see, my fellow adventurers have brought with them this large covered cage. Before I remove the shroud, I ask the audience for silence. For your own personal safety, absolute silence. No loud noises, please.
Quiet now.
And now, without any further ado, I present to you a specimen that, according to Professor Illingworth, has been dead for tens of millions of years, but which tonight you will see is very much alive. Ladies and gentlemen, a living pterodactyl.
Nothing to be afraid of. It's only a flinch.
Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please, take your seat. Please.
Oh, my.
Is this enough proof for you, Illingworth?
Have them be quiet, Professor. The creature's straining at its tentacles.
Oh, look, it's biting through its cage.
Please, quiet down. Everyone, please quiet down.
Bending the bars of the cage.
Please.
Give me the shroud.
Oh, throw that over the cage.
Throw the cage.
Oh,
you control it?
Don't panic. The animal is more scared than you are.
It's heading for the window.
Oh, no.
Stop it! It's heading for the window. Gone. Oh, pterodactyl is gone. What a story.
What a night.
Here's to all. all of us. The four who dared journey to the lost world and came back alive.
I don't know which was worse, the pack of ape men or Illingworth.
Assuming there's a difference.
How many times up the Amazon did you think of being at a pub like this, Malone?
Well, the thought had occurred to me.
Or were you too busy thinking of Professor Summerlee? Sorry, I mean Professor Malone.
You'll get used to it, Lord John.
Of course I will. Now, there's something I want to discuss with you. Sort of a private business.
A private? In a pub?
Best place to keep secrets is in public, I always say. I want to show you something. Look here, in this cigar box.
What are they? Marbles?
No, where's your eyesight, you three? Marbles? These are precious stones, diamonds, emeralds, rubies. I've just had them appraised, and they made me an offer that I think I could split four ways and still be rich.
Where did you get them?
Well, you remember when you had me capture you a pterodactyl chick?
Yes?
I've only seen one other place in the world with a volcanic vent of blue clay like that. It was in the De Beers diamond mine. When I went to get your pterodactyl, I also fished out a fortune.
How much are they worth?
200,000 pounds, minimum.
Really?
That's 50,000 for each of us. I feel that's only fair.
50,000?
Oh.
With that, I could finance a private museum.
What about you, Malone?
Me?
No, the pretty Malone.
I'd retire from teaching and devote my life to research.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to have another go at the old plateau.
Very clever,
Ronston. Yes, and I suppose you'll use yours to raise a family, Malone.
Not just yet. I think if you will have me, that I would rather go back with you.
Really?
If a certain party would agree to join me.
Oh, why, Mr. Malone, what party did you have in mind?
Extra, extra, strange bird flies over Rio de Janeiro. Scientists identify it as a patera. It's a big storm. Extra, extra, only in the Daily Gazette. Extra, extra, read on about it.
Lost World by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was directed by Leonard Nimoy from a script co-written by Nat Segeloff and John DeLancey. The cast, in alphabetical order, included John DeLancey, Roxanne Dawson, Richard Doyle, Marnie Moserman, Leonard Nimoy, Ethan Phillips, Dwight Schultz, and Armin Shimerman. Original music was composed and performed by Peter Erskine and recorded at Puck Productions in Santa Monica, California. Production sound was by David Brow with Tom Bennett and Diane Brow as associates. Stage manager, Mary Valenti, Foley artist, Michael Spira, post-production supervisor, Jeff Howell, post-production engineer, Gina Gutierrez. The Lost World was produced by Alien Voices, Incorporated for Simon & Schuster Audio. This is Leonard Nimoy.
Voices.